Welcome to Polycast, a civilization podcast focused on game strategy.
Dan Q.
Makalua.
The Mean Team.
Ed Jin.
With guest co-hosts.
Warren Alvito.
Stormtrooper 412.
Was that a transition?
It might have been, until we pointed it out.
Okay.
Whoops.
Welcome to episode 267 of Dan Quick.
You never know what's going to make it through post-production.
Macaloo.
Are they cookies?
Philip Bellu.
Still hailing from the Ghetto Rig special, but I'm a me and team.
Mad Jim.
Oh, this is going to get so murdered in post.
And I am Martin Alvito.
We've known about Civ 6 coming up for a while, so hopefully you've been able to save a little bit of money these past, how many months has it been since we've known about this? Five, six, somewhere in there?
Are you asking people to plan to buy a game that...
Dan, asking people to plan things? What is this?
Isn't this just basic economics here? I mean, if it's worth it to you to pay full retail, buy it. If not, don't, and wait.
Yeah.
I'm sure there will be a Steam sale at some point, if it's not viable. And we actually did have something like that. We discussed that a long time ago. So certain countries where it's a lot less viable to buy it, where the price is higher. Though there's been more and more sales on it recently. So
yeah, I think in my pre-order copy, I got a physical copy like 20% off.
Yep. There's so many Let's Plays out there and other information that if you think it's going to be broken on launch, then sure, don't buy it.
Civ 6 version of Russia. It might surprise you, but we have Cossacks back. They're quite handy, a little bit extra strength, a little bit extra attacking and whatnot. When you settle cities, you get 8 extra tiles and tons of space and production. You get culture and science from trade routes with Civ 2 have more civics and tech. That's your ability. Now, the interesting thing with that is that it encourages you to be a backward warmonger. You just send your culture and science trade routes out and leech all the materials you need. Then they have a replaced it for a holy site. So if a person uses the city, that city gets an extra tile free of charge. You get lots and lots of tiles.
I don't think we know Peter's agenda, do we?
Yeah, no, I don't think we actually 100% actually know per se, but given that most of the other leader agendas seem to be based on what their unique leader ability is for the plus minus, it's a fairly good bet.
I think it's fairly clear what his agenda will be. He will be the next Pocatello, probably.
Nah, he's just going to be the next Putz.
Yeah, but he has that paired with the ability to catch up from lagging in tech after doing it.
Well, if seeing as how he gets plus one faith and plus one production in Tundra tiles, if he's going to be surrounded by Tundra, he's probably going to be behind.
Yeah.
so that actually works. That works in a weird sort of roundabout
it's
way.
It's kind of a weird package, isn't it? I mean, you know, they took half of the Shoshone UA, they took something very similar to that UU, they threw in the beakers from trade, and they added the culture to that from Gods and Kings, and they've taken that Tundra faith belief, they've wrapped it all up and called it the Civ, right? It seems a little underwhelming to me. I mean, I see how it all fits together, right? The way you win with that Civ is you settle down near the Tundra, you work all the not-Tundra tiles to grow, right? And then when we hit the religious phase of the game, you switch over to all those Tundra tiles, you make a ton of faith, and you bury everybody in all those proselytizing units in order to win by religion.
Yeah, because you're never going to be able to catch up on science.
Yeah, there's no other way you can win. You have to win by religion or you're done. I mean, that's just kind of how the UA works.
Well, you can try to hold your own and win by time.
Yeah.
Yeah. That usually doesn't work very well at the higher levels.
Yeah. Well, the other thing you can do with that is pick beliefs that give you a benefit for spreading. So the usual tithe or other such things. That way you can utilize all that faith and make everybody pay you.
Am I the only one who's thinking Cossack spam?
Yeah, but you have to get there first.
Yeah, I think there are better ways if you want to murder everybody in the early game. You just don't want to wait that long. I mean, like, you could get away with it in Civ 4 with the Russians because, at least in vanilla, that unit was so darn good. You know, if you could survive that long, you could get to it. But I don't think that the Cossack is that much better than other units of that era.
What do we really know about it other than it replaces the cavalry?
Well, it's got a little bit of extra power, and that was about it, right? And it had that other Shoshone ability that was...
It also has move after attack.
Yeah, move after attack, right.
Yeah, you can get in,
pretty big deal.
Surround, impound, and then leave.
Oh, so the cavalry can itself do that. That's one of the Cossack. Oh, okay.
I just remember in Civ 5, move after attack being a lot better on something that could shoot and move than something that's got to run up, hits things, and then run away.
Well, things have changed between Civ 5 and Civ 6.
I realize that.
Especially for the unit side and the cav side. Horse units aren't quite as completely and utterly stupid to build anymore.
Unless, well, they were stupid one direction or the other. I mean, at release, they were really stupid, overpowered, and then they completely removed them from the game, basically.
Well, at least in Civ 6, cav units have, they have their own promotions, and they're separate from the other ones, so that's kind of nice. They only really have to worry about spears and pikes. And since there's a massive gap in units, you're pretty much looking at combat strengths that are similar enough to the melee ones that should be able to, with volume, do extra damage. Plus, they move faster.
Alright, so to help Russia get to the point that it can use a Cossack and actually get a religious victory, what we need to do is, yeah, we've got the Holy Site district replacement so they can construct it in half a time as any other civ. It's the Lavra, I believe that's how it's pronounced. So you go ahead and you build that. You find the Congo. You get buddy-buddy with them.
Yep.
You set up some trade routes to help you with the science. You spread your religion, and you kind of use them as a buffer from the rest of the world until you win. There you go.
Yeah. Here, you go out in front. You do stuff. Bye-bye. I don't know. The extra tiles make sense for Russia, giving them the UA. I know even back in Civ 5, people are like, when it came out with the Shoshone, it's like, well, Russia could have used that. So it sort of fits. Extra faith and production from Tundra, sure, if they've got a crappy Tundra start. But again, extra faith and extra production can't be eaten. So if you have too much Tundra, you're probably going to have a problem actually growing. So that might be a bit of an issue. I mean, frankly, the extra culture and science from trade routes, from people who are more advanced or more of them, to me, that's just the old catch-up mechanic. And frankly, it sucks. And it's going to be difficulty-based. So people on Prince, you might, if you're not doing well or if you're doing about okay, maybe you'll get a couple points here and there. But if you play on Didi or whatever the high level is this time, since we don't even know, you're just going to soak in that culture and science early game, just like back in Civ 5. So, yeah, it's kind of crappy on that front. But then once you catch up, your unique ability for Peter, well, goes to the tubes, so whatever. The Lavra itself, there was a huge thread about it all by itself, and it's like, oh, use a great person and get one extra tile. Whoop-dee-doo. Does not, to me, seem like an actual unique... Just as the combination is, it seems like something's missing to me.
Well, like, and you're going to get an extra tile from a great person when you're already getting more tiles anyway.
Yeah, and you, it just and seems you like have more, something missing.
Yeah, you could have more Tundra and snow. Oh, goody, what I always wanted.
It's pretty underwhelming. I guess my point is with this, if you can get out of the Tundra, you can use the catch-up mechanic potentially for a conquest game. I don't know if the Cossacks will keep the move after attacking bonus, but that's something you might be able to roll with for some time, especially if range is toned down ever. The hit and runs are really strong, and if the enemies can't do it, even more so. But yeah, the Lavra seems kind of weak. And that'll probably see you at some point.
Oh, I know. The other civs are not going to see you as much competition. They're not going to see you as a real opponent because of all your hindrances, so they're going to ignore you, and that way you can win.
Yeah,
the underdog. Woohoo!
Woo.
I mean, are there a lot of civs that want to pick on underdogs, though?
It depends. If you have enough units, then you're okay. I mean, the one thing about the Lavra for the extra tiles from Great Person is if you do use, say, an artist or whatever that gives you multiple charge stuff, like here's some art and more art and more art, then that'll give you more extra tiles. So maybe you want to go culturally on that front if you want more tiles. But yeah, I think it's already been said enough. The best use of cities for Russia is just outside of Tundra. You don't want to be deep dead inside the Tundra unless there's really nice stuff there otherwise. But if you have some Tundra, preferably hills and or forests and or resources, and then some normal tiles, so you can actually, you know, plant farms, then you'll have some extra faith and some extra production without killing yourself on the food.
You know, I'm sure it's purely coincidence, by the way, that the live stream that Firaxis had this past week was on the next civilization we're going to talk about, as opposed to Russia. I'm surprised they didn't live stream Russia.
But why do that when you can show off Greece again? Because Gorgo. So now we do know for a fact that we are going to be able to have multiple leaders per civ. The only one right now at launch. Gorgo is still Greece, except getting a culture bonus when you defeat things.
50%. Woohoo!
Yeah.
Basically, Monty from Div 5.
Uh-huh. Basically.
Yep. Kill stuff.
Yep. Kill stuff. Get culture. Get your civics faster.
Yeah, and it's any defeated unit's base strength, not just a barb.
Right. Yep. It's everybody.
Good.
Except your own units, by the way. You don't get that. It's your own unit.
Yeah. No, we don't have friendly fire training in civ.
Yet. It's supposed to be the most modded civ ever, so I'm sure that'll arrive at some point.
Modded or moddable?
Both. Yes. Answer is sure.
Kill stuff, get culture. It's a win-win.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Got a whiny neighbor because you built something? Kill it.
You got Russia next to you and they took all your land? Well,
let me show you what taking all your land is like.
Well, you may not want Russia's land, but still, you probably will want to get rid of them from the map before they go for a Russia victory.
I don't know. Let Russia settle all the nice city locations, get huge land grab, and then just take their cities. And then let them spam out another settler for the next city location.
It depends. It depends where they settle.
Yeah, I mean, if they settle wrong, you can burn it down.
Yeah, exactly.
And then just wait.
If they're not in your game, then you can completely ignore this side conversation.
Yeah.
But otherwise, so they got that leader bonus, they got something else. Actually, we know something about Gorgo that we don't know about Peter and a number of other civs, because for some reason.
Mm-hmm.
Their agenda thing, or I mean her thang, her agenda thang.
Agenda thang. Dan is Von Texan.
Well, it sounds much better on Mackie for some reason, but anyway.
Now, before anyone says anything else, did anyone notice her kind of seductive chest?
I was going to say, yeah, she just kind of swings her hips around and stuff. It's like, are you trying to negotiate with me or seduce me? Or what are we doing here?
No, she's just distracting you with booby jiggle.
Yeah, distracting you before she sticks a spear in you, that's how it goes.
I see, she is, exactly. Yeah, is that a spear unit behind me?
What it comes down to is Gorgo is the go stab things for culture version of Greece, and Pericles is the go play nice with people for Greece.
The leader ability is Thermopylae, and with your shield on it is her agenda, which is she wants you to go beat things up. If you're not beating things up, you suck.
Oh, fair enough.
Well, you have to be at war at least once. If you're totally peaceful, then she thinks you suck. But if you got into a fight with somebody, then you're not as bad.
But then it's going to be a fine line between love and hate if you are at war with her, though.
Yeah.
Go beat up on people, just not me.
Well, maybe she'll respect you for fighting her and then, you know, making peace.
Oh, that's a big, respectful nuke you have flying towards my...
let us show our respect with a nuke. Boom! Oops, tight capital.
But the other part to her agenda is that she won't give it up in a war. She will not give you anything, and she will kill anybody who gives up anything in a peace deal. Because she'll decide you're weak and therefore must be removed from the map.
Well, she is the representative of Sparta, so...
You gave up one gold to end the war. Die!
Yes.
Totally have to have both Greeces in a game, because that can be a thing.
Yeah.
It's confirmed, that can be a thing. So...
Are they going to have the same color, though? Or are they just going to, like, invert them or something?
No, it's a different color scheme. I think Gorgo is closer to England, right? Because the Pericles is the white and blue.
Okay.
And from Gorgo's perspective, those are probably the white colors. Yeah, you can white and you can surrender and you can be blue because I'm taking all your stuff.
So
and of course, the unique unit and the unique infrastructure is the same. The Hoplite and, of course, the Acropolis.
Yep.
Oh, live stream. They played Gorgo. We all got to see how awesome it was.
Awesome is a relative term, but okay.
Yeah.
We got to see something.
First-hand knowledge of how this culture bonus things work. Oop, I'm going to stab that. Oop, I'm going to stab that. Oop, I'm stabbing that. Oh, look how many policies I have.
Yeah, also first-hand knowledge of how bad Ed plays the game.
Yeah, I mean, now you know why we don't get a more than deity level videos. Jesus.
Well, in fairness, Pete Murray didn't help, so...
Yeah. Hey, let's separate our hoplites so that they don't get their own bonus.
Well, we failed hard at Warmonger. Not Alexander the Great confirmed. Xerxes confirmed. Blame difficulty level, Emperor hard.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, there was a... hate is a strong word, but... displeasure and disappointment was pretty much a recurring theme from Civ community comments. Most of the information that came out from the live stream had nothing to do with the game being played, but responding to some questions from the community. Although Ed did initially clarify, like, why is Greece having a second leader from the beginning? He mentioned that it's harking back to the capability we had in Civ 4, but the other thing we wanted to emphasize is just how great that's going to be for the mod community going forward. So there you go. If you want a second leader for any other Civ, you're going to have to go to a modder, because that's what it's all about. Yeah, that's all it is. Played on a continent's standard size map for 8 players, on quick speed and the Emperor difficulty instead of Prince. Ed's quote, "I want to make certain that the AI is pushing back appropriately," unquote. Well, I guess we did get to see that. Hey, this looks like a really nice site for the campus, because we've got the two mountains, and we've got the jungle, and then there was absolutely nothing more done with getting that. The campus. And I'm like, hello, Bueller?
No, but the Rome AI was doing okay, I guess. It was mass expanding. Because they're rapidly expanding, they're getting free monuments everywhere, and therefore plowed through the civic tree, at least the early part of it.
And at one point when they declared on Rome as Greece, there was also Victoria in the game, but she really didn't play too much of a factor. At that point, they're moving the hoplite in, and I'm like, okay, yeah, why don't you move it adjacent to the second Roman city, which is on the jungle tile? But instead, they moved it onto an open hex that would now meant that they were going to attack the city across the river.
Mm.
And they were commenting how that this was actually the better... Oh, yeah, let's put it in this location. This is a better location. And I'm just like, oh, no. Please stop. I mean, if they were doing this intentionally, it was very entertaining.
Yeah, I think that's the exact same moment at which I screamed at the monitor and said, "Oh no, why are you doing that?"
They're trying to live stream and play the game at the same time, I understand, but I figured that's why they had two people.
So, well, from what it was said, I think in the thread somewhere in there, Ed was more focused on trying to maintain and create the siege, so that the city wouldn't regenerate itself, rather than actually just killing the Roman units and then pushing in that way.
And then the city got their walls up and everything fell flat.
Yep, pretty much. So, lesson from the stream. Kill all the units first, then worry about the city. Yeah. And also bring a battering ram.
Yes.
Also, yes. Get good.
Oh.
Get good, noob. What?
I also enjoyed towards the end of the stream where Ed's like, "We also promised we'd be talking about advanced starts today, but we decided we wanted to show this build, which has like the tourism lens in it. It definitely has updates that people haven't seen before. Yet previously in the stream, they showed the tourism lens and they said, hey, we actually have no tourism to show you."
Well, it would be early game, right? You really shouldn't have a bunch of tourism just sitting there.
No, so if you actually did an advanced start, like you talked about doing... And then you would have been able to show the tourism lens. Wasn't there also some unit cycling fun during the war?
Oh, yeah.
People are like, we can turn this off, right? And it's like, well...
Oh, God. I hope so.
If you can, they didn't. And I'm also screaming, can we... I know that's for, you know, dramatic effect and stuff, but I'm thinking, is there like quick combat and quick moves? So I talked about this before in the last live stream. It's like, oh my gosh, okay. You know, some of it was funny at the beginning, but can we have that too so we can actually see more of the war? That'd be great. Although, given how the war went, maybe they were just as well. They were up on the hour.
Yep. The auto cycle, holy crap, that's just going to kill people. Make them rage.
Yep.
Sadness.
Unless we can have an undo button.
Auto cycle bad in the late beta. Like, that's not that complicated, right? Come on.
Oh, and Ed did say that this should be right on with the bill that everyone is going to see next week, quote unquote. So, yeah. Otherwise, from the video, there was the question, and this is an eternal Civ question. Can you prevent a leader from appearing in the game, which was also appropriately timed, given, of course, they were playing as Gorgo, the second Greece leader? Ed's response, we don't have that capability right now, but we have a lot of thoughts on how to customize the setup screen, and I like to keep pursuing those because there are some cool things we can do with letting people pick exactly what they want while still getting random choices. So, translation, you are going to add to the setup capability preventing a leader from the game. because that will allow people to pick exactly what they want while still getting some random choices.
Yes, yes, exactly. I want a lot of things, but I don't want these three. Go away.
Yeah, it's kind of like the really advanced setup mod in CV5, where you can actually deselect certain leaders while leaving everyone else possibilities would be like, okay, I'm going to go for a purely scientific, peaceful game, so I don't want like Shaka, I don't want Genghis, I don't want Alex, but everyone else is fair game. I think that's good, and I think this is what actually CV5 needed without having to be modded.
At some point, you'll be able to block off. So, like, okay, I just want one of the leaders from Greece, not both, in the game.
Yeah.
Or I'm getting tired of seeing Gorgo because she's always picked. Yada, yada, yada. You'll be able to modify it that way.
Or even, I would like to be random Civ, except this Civ, because I random into them, like, the last three times.
Yeah, I'm getting tired of seeing the same Civ over and over again.
Yeah.
Actually, that could work for me if, I mean, doing LPs is like, okay, I'll just hit random and see what I get. Okay, next LP. Random minus that one.
Yeah. But anyway, how does the AI change at higher difficulty levels, Pete asked from the chat. Well, in Civ 5, the AI sort of played at the Chieftain level, and it also started getting bonuses as you got above Prince. And those two stacked together. We simplified this. Above Chieftain, there's a small incremental bonus that you'll see at Warlord and Prince, and those just kind of continue all the way up to DD. In general, the main thing is that there's a yield bonus added for each of those levels. Each of those AI cities are just a little more productive than they normally would be. So, business as usual.
Yeah, AI gets a bunch of bonuses.
Honestly, that is what most of what we ended up doing, along with changes in barbarian behavior by difficulty levels. When they send a raiding party or a city-sacking party at the higher difficulty levels, it's got a lot more forces with it. Well, that stands to reason. I mean, it's higher difficulty.
Okay, so Gorgo gets more culture.
Yeah.
Yay!
Well, assuming, of course, you defeat the barbarians, they don't defeat you, but sure, yes, yes.
Yeah, I have noticed the barbarians look a little rough now. Every game is raging barbarians, whether you want it or not.
Yep.
Ed did say, sometimes your aggressive game gets swarmed with barbarians initially, but not in this game because they got quote-unquote lucky. Yes, Ed used the word lucky. Well, you got lucky in that respect, but your luck kind of ran out with the war. But anyway, sure.
Well, that's the thing, you kind of want the barbs to come to you so that you can get the Eureka for bronze working.
Well, yeah, I mean, if you have to go where the barbs are, man, that's just a lot of work. You should just come
that's
to you.
Just extra time.
Oh, man. And extra maintenance, because you're going to have the units sooner, and they're going to be going out in the world, and it's just, oh, it's just a nightmare.
Yeah, no one wants to leave home.
Because home is where the heart is.
Did anyone see barbs being able to take over cities in any of the previews so far?
No, see, barbarians attacking cities, but not to the point where they could potentially take it, and then what happens if they do that?
It might be an interesting mechanic to see, you know, like, you left your capital city too undefended, and, oh boy, it was overrun by barbs. Game over.
That would be the shortest LP ever. Hey, look, guys, I just got wrecked by barbs. Oh, well, see you next time.
No, I think maybe a shorter would be if your starting settler got captured by barbs. Not that that would ever happen to anybody, ever. And then, in conclusion, of course, if you want to check out the live stream to check out how the Phyraxians did as Greece against Rome, and of course the comment was made, Greece and Rome, have they ever fought? Ed says, Pete's like, never. So this is not even historically accurate, lols. But Pete afterwards saying, we're not quite in an ideal position, but after declaring on Rome, which ended up being in a bit of an understatement, and after engaging with Rome, Ed says, the Emperor AI can be a bit trickier. Well, I don't know if it was just the AI that had issues.
As yeah. Word,
you know, that's cool.
Yeah, that's cool.
Although, did anyone notice that there was this top bar that said view reports? They didn't actually view the reports. They said they wanted to show what was new. And we didn't get to see view reports, so I have no idea. What are we viewing a report on?
Well, people had been complaining that there was no information in the game, so maybe they added it.
Maybe.
Because that wasn't there before.
Yeah.
It used to have all the luxuries and strategic and bonus resources, like basically all the different types of resources used to be spammed across the top bar.
Oh, and yeah.
Those are all basically gone now.
What? There's no more luxury resources? Oh, man.
Totally.
Oh, what? That's going to be rough, man. That's wow. Yep. We should have led with that.
Yeah,
why are we waiting so long to talk about this? And you can also, in the stream, enjoy some humorous moments when Ed's like, so what's so-and-so saying in the chat about where we're settling? And Pete's like, well, we're going to have to wait 90 seconds because there's a delay. Quote-unquote, because of the way Twitch works. Twitch works. Lol. But it's like, yeah, you probably don't want input from the chat about where you're going to settle. Otherwise, you're just going to sit there, like, waiting a minute or two for it to do.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess you could answer more questions from the chat.
While waiting for the chat to answer your questions.
Yeah, it's so meta. Recorded for episode 265 with Dan Q, Makalua, the Mian Team, Mad Jin, Gareth Zaka, and Kale.
Envoys and city-states.
Three things I kind of picked up here from this article on civilization.com, which, by the way, oddly enough, did not give me weird scripting errors when I went here. They seem to have taken care of it, at least on part of the website. Well done. It only took you way too long, but hey, better late than never,
different.
I guess.
It does.
It does look different. It looks nice. I almost don't want to give a compliment, but there you go.
You set aren't another... screwing up. Slow clap.
I know.
You years. Yeah. You finally did it.
Now we don't even know the site anymore. In Civilization VI, and I have to groan at this quotation, I'm waiting for almost everyone to pounce on a certain word. How does it start? In Civilization VI, city-states are much more streamlined.
Die in a fire.
Why? And next thing you're going to tell me that they're synergistic in this paradigm shift. Anyway, city-state...
They probably are synergistic. If you got a couple of them together with your civ bonuses, you can make synergy.
That's a special in-game yield.
Synergy. Synergy. It's like synergy.
You get three synergy a turn.
To generate synergy. One, find energy. B, add bullshit. Anyway.
I was everywhere, so...
Envoys earn resources over time, and the more envoys you send to a particular city-state, the greater the influence you have over that city-state. Sounding like Civ 5 counterpart. Okay. Players can even send an envoy to a city-state they are at war with, potentially changing the city-state's allegiance in the middle of the conflict. Woo! Declaring war on a city-state removes all envoys the player has there. Otherwise, envoys stay on a city-state permanently.
Interesting.
Yeah, no, getting screwed just by, like, oh, I have...
You know, now Civ I declare.
Yeah, a little Civ 5 version. I've got 145 influence as Civ. Alex has got 147. Alex just declared war on me. I now have negative 60.
Yeah,
that was a little...
Remember that crap.
Yeah.
And that cut both ways. The player probably abused it even more, but it wasn't good either way.
It's such a nice way to build up the player's value in a city-state, too, where if I have three envoys there, I really don't want to declare war on them. That's wasted effort. I've invested in those guys. Or if somebody destroys them, I don't want you to destroy them. I've built three envoys and sent them there. That ends up being really nice.
Yep.
What is the purpose of adding multiple? Is that just going to increase your diplomatic strength with this city-state, basically?
It gives you more stuff.
Yeah, there's
okay,
two
so
things.
It's much increases the city-state's output.
It's pursuit of tiers, yeah, all the way up to suzerain.
Yes, it's the pursuit of tiers. You have to make everybody else
salty
cry.
Tears.
Yeah.
Are delicious.
Thanks, Dan. Well, there's three levels in there, which is level 1, 3, and 6, where you just get yields out of them. So the first one, it gives you just a little bit in your capital. Then level 3 and level 6 just give you extra crap based on your district. So say a science one gives you 2 science for every campus district. So if you mass spam your campus district, you really want to find a city-state of science, because that'll just give you a ton of crap all over the place. And then, of course, there's the suzerain. So the one with the most envoys is the boss of the city-state, and you get a special
this
bonus.
This is great, because when I played Civ 5, all I wanted to do was conquer city-states. I had no purpose for them. Now that changes that all in its head.
Yeah, it was the same way. I always played Mongols because city-states were all little starter cities for me. That's kind of nice.
Yeah.
Thank you for starting this little city.
Well, that's the thing. You could still do that. Just pick a couple of your own city-states that you want to keep around, because they give you nice bonuses that give you synergy with what you're doing. Yeah, and kill everybody else's.
I like much.
The other thing is those the suzerain bonuses are obviously all pretty good. Yep, the synergy bonuses are all really nice. So,
I have nobody but myself to blame for this.
Yeah.
Exactly.
I think the ownership of the CS bonus is there to make sure that you don't want to slaughter them, because there's lots of them out there. Like, if you're a holy religious type person and you have Jerusalem on the map and you become their buddy, they will automatically convert to your religion that you founded and exert pressure just like they were the holy city of your religion.
Well, that was my problem with Civ 5. It's not that they didn't have bonuses on butting up with a city-state. It's that they're so minor compared to getting a new city. Getting a new city is awesome. And so it's just like, yeah, that's great. My plus two science is okay, but I can build a building in my new city that gives me that.
Exactly.
You know,
and that's why I conquered them. That's why I grabbed them. This is incredible because now these are more than you can get out of your own city. Yeah. This is why you might specialize a little bit more. So say you have this city builds your industrial district because it's got good production there, and you build that, but then say you build a couple coastal cities because this city can't build a harbor, and you've got a couple of coastal cities for building your harbors and maybe some extra commerce, and then this city provides production to those cities. That way you don't have to build industrial stuff to them. Or this city
even
builds
even more specialized cities.
Builds the entertainment complex to make sure that those other cities don't get all like uppity.
Look how far we've come since good old Civ 1 and Civ 2. It's blowing my mind.
Although there are some city-state suzerain bonuses that seem a little questionable or seem very timed. Candy, the religious city-state. If you're the suzerain, you get a relic every time you discover a new national wonder.
Yeah, I wondered about that one, too.
Plus 50% faith from all relics.
You better hope you find them very early.
Yeah, you better hope that you find candy before you find the natural.
Yeah,
that too.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then, where do you put your relics? You have to put them somewhere.
Yeah, I guess in that case, with candy, you wouldn't want to invest the envoy to become a suzerain if it's like, well, I've already discovered all the natural wonders. I don't know where to put the relics. So I would still like their religious, right? So I would still like plus two faith for having an envoy there. Maybe, plus two faith in every other holy district. But because I can't take advantage of the suzerain bonus, I guess someone else can have that. And
envoy to candy has spheres.
I also thought of that in terms of like, hey, I am nowhere near any water at all. Hey, look, Nan Madal, your district's honor next to coastal tiles provide plus two culture as suzerain.
Yep.
Okay. Well, I guess I'm not going to be your suzerain.
Oh. Just the statement that you're not going to become the suzerain and let somebody else have that bonus tells me you play Civ entirely different than me. Nobody gets any bonuses but me.
Well, I never said that I would allow.
Not being a suzerain is not exclusive of burning you to the ground.
Later on, when you become the boss of the city-state, they have guaranteed allegiance during times of peace and war, although that's not really true because you can send envoys to city-states that are at war with you, which I assume eventually forces them into peace with you if you knock the other person out of the suzerain bonus. So they're not really guaranteed allegiance, but you can even pay gold to take their military units for a limited time.
And to tie briefly back to the religion live stream from Firaxis, at one point, pointing out, hey, I've actually got control of this unit from the city-state because we're the suzerain and we use the gold for it. Hovering over the unit will identify how many turns you have remaining of that control, as well as reminding you who actually owns this unit. Which is nice, because in Civilization V, it's like, okay, this militaristic city-state, okay, it's going to give me a new unit every 17 turns or whatever. So what turn number is it? Did anyone remember? No? Bueller? No? Oh, okay. Well.
Bueller.
So, I guess as long as you're the suzerain, after the 20 turns, you could just turn around and buy the gold again and have another 20-turn control? Assuming the unit doesn't die?
Yeah, assuming you didn't get it killed off, sure.
Yeah, sounds like it's time for that suicide rush, right? Oh, I guess it's time for you to attack by yourself.
You get to go first.
Hey, why am I going first? I'm your trusted city-state ally.
Yeah, exactly.
That's why we're sending you, because we trust you to get the job done, sir. Oh, okay. That's great.
Oh, okay. That seems reasonable.
Yeah, and you could lose your suzerain bonus if somebody gets more envoys in there than you, which diplomatic tension outside of war. So I'm not at war with Germany, but man, they're going to be flipping my city-states, and I like being suzerain in my city-states, so now that gives me another reason to try to come up with a reason to declare war on Germany so I can...
Envoys are definitely not a unit.
Oh, they're not?
They're not.
No.
You can see in the second screenshot of what are city-states. It's got send envoys, two, and then they're on the envoy list. It's got a number, and it's got little buttons left and right, so I'm guessing more and less. So it's just a click a button.
Yeah, it's an abstraction like spies were in Civ 5.
Okay.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, you just click a few buttons.
And boom, they're there, still, presumably.
That makes good sense.
The other thing is you have to build up to get envoys over time.
Also.
So that has one drawback for this system versus Civ 5. In Civ 5, if somebody went and threw a bunch of cash at a city-state, on your turn, you could turn around and throw cash back, and then you guys can fight every turn to who's got more cash. In this one, no. You get an envoy, you can go spend it. But if you spend it to take over a city-state from somebody else, unless they have an extra envoy sitting around to throw it down, they have to wait till they get their next one.
Ah, okay, so, okay. How do you generate those? Is it just a timer, or is there ways to boost the number of envoys you can get?
Under the social policies, we know that a political philosophy, we now trigger the diplomatic, as well as before you had the military and the economic. And one of them is +2 influence in a turn towards generating the next envoy. Mm-hmm. So you need some kind of civic in your government, it sounds like, to be able to actually earn influence points toward being able to get your next envoy or whatever.
Was I the only person that needed a Google suzerain, or did everybody else know that word?
I knew that word, but I've never heard games. It. Yeah. It's pretty obscure, though.
It's a little obscure, but it's accurate. And part of Civ is teaching people new words.
Yeah, I kind of like that they pulled a new thing out, concept out there.
I kind of took it in a way that just at a glance, when you hear you become the city-state suzerain as opposed to the ally, that is trying to prompt the Civ player, especially established Civ players like us, this might not be the same as Civ 5. So it's a similar term, but it's not exact. So you probably want to find out, why did we call it suzerain? Because I don't think Firaxis forgot similar. That they called them allies. I don't think they forgot the word ally.
It has a pretty strong implication different from an ally.
Yes.
Yeah.
I am the boss of suzerain. You, is what it says.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. It's really not suggesting an alliance at all.
Yeah. I like that because when I was destroying and getting rid of the whole city-state mechanic in my games, because I was like, well, that's a free city. This is now, why should I conquer that when I can influence and manipulate it and protect it from all my enemies? So I'd build a little ring of cities around it, you know? So it emphasizes the city-state gameplay in a positive way, I think.
So the city-state can be your posse, is what you're saying.
Yeah.
Email. Yes, people still do send these things. I know it's hard.
What?
I know. Email is not dead, you know, like records, because no one listens to records anymore. And print, I mean, there's no more things that are printed on paper anymore, because that's totally passé now, right? Yep. And I'm going to copy this for our guests into our Skype chat. It is very long.
Oh, God.
It is. Oh. It is. We're going to take it a paragraph at a time. I'm not going to read the whole thing and then go back.
Holy crap, it keeps going.
Hi, Polycast team. I've been watching some of the Civ 6 preview videos and reflecting on the series lately. I am really getting the feeling that it's turning into a different kind of game now. Maybe it is fair to say that it's been simplified or even dumbed down. It feels to me like it's hollow and lacking in terms of economic and empire management side of things, which surely has to be the core of the game, ! And I read that first paragraph, and I think, that's not my take from the marketing of it at all. Simplified and dumbed down, man oh man, that has some really heavy connotations on this show. Ooh. I think it's different, and I think sometimes if different might be seen as simple when you're comparing it to, say, Civilization 5 or Civilization 4, and then you think, therefore, the gameplay itself is going to be simplified or dumbed down, but I just keep thinking about all the things that we haven't seen from the previews. I want to get my hands on the game so I can actually feel and experience just how immersive this game appears to be.
All I see reading it is somebody coming back from Civ 4 Plus expansions and, you know, saying, I don't like this, and I'm looking at it, Civ 6 and saying, well, it looks like we've got a lot more mechanics that are going to add depth to the Civ 5 system. So I don't know if you had the context of Civ 5, I don't know where you'd be coming from with this.
A lot of people said when Civ 5 came out that it was a dumbed down Civ 4. So
I was going to say, this argument sounds very familiar.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely.
I'm thinking some people's take on the graphic style, because some people have called it cartoony and stuff, and I think that may be affecting people's opinion of whether it is before they've even actually got to play the game.
I don't know, next paragraph kind of says more about it than the first paragraph. So the whole district just seemed a bit weird to him. Do you like what they've done with civics, governments, and city-state interaction? So that's nice. But look of the map and the way you interact with tiles seems, well, a bit baby-ish. Yeah, no. That's applying an aesthetic thing to say, oh, look, the aesthetics of the game, that must determine how thin or simplified or dumbed down the rest of the game must be. And yet, the more and more we see of it, the deeper and deeper the mechanics are.
I can see how he could fall into the trap of that thinking, because you see a lot of that being said by other people. And then it kind of sticks in your mind, especially if that's one of the first things you read and you keep reading. Oh, there must be something to it. But we're judging a book by its cover here.
Yeah, well, the first couple screenshots didn't help with that.
No, they really didn't.
But I'm not sure how you can say that districts are part of the simplification of it, since forcing people to actually build stuff on the map and think about where they place stuff
and what you want each individual city to specialize in,
or putting certain things at risk by putting it outside of the city, yada yada yada. That's not simplifying.
Yeah, we're used to like your academy can be easily raised down, but the campus district is a whole hit to science. Mm-hmm. Or somebody comes along and raises down your encampments or your holy sites, which is all of your religion for that city. It's that's not less complicated.
Or the fact that you need an encampment to build units that require strategic resources, if you've only got the one. No, hey, look, I've got 6 iron from this one tile. Okay, I'm going to buy a bunch of legions or whatever in this city far, far away. You know, in the city that I just planted far, far away. No.
Like in real life, you have to ship those things out.
Yeah, it makes it a little bit harder.
And also needing an encampment if you want your city to have any kind of bombard capability as well. I mean, I know there's a lot of abstraction in Civ, but for things like that, or especially, hey, this city's got 15 wonders in it. Are they building wonders on top of each other? That's a pretty cool tech. We should get that.
Yeah. I think for that respect, on the district side, I would argue that it has not simplified the game or dumbed it down. I would argue that the district's part, and I really hate to say this, unpacking your cities. Sorry.
No, you hate to love and love to hate saying that. Yes.
Yeah. Actually requires more effort and thought in terms of empire management. Now, the question of empire management side of thing, I don't know, because like, if you take Civ 4 as the empire manager version of Civ, Civ 5 definitely didn't have it at all, comparatively, or very little of it. So I can see that as a weird thing, but I think there's a bit more empire management now in Civ 6 compared to Civ 5. It's back on an upward track rather than downward.
And I think his third paragraph kind of echoes what we've said in part in response to the first and the second paragraph, which is, now I know that none of us actually have our hands on the game yet, and yes, it's likely to have patches and DLC as time goes on. But honestly, the way I'm thinking at the minute is that, based on my impressions from a number of Let's Plays, I might not even bother with the game, at least initially. That my first impressions on the basic design of the game are sufficient to decide that the game is not for me, and that unless it is radically reworked, probably no amount of patches and DLC would change my mind. And if there are enough Civ fans feel the same way, then Firaxis might succeed in alienating some of their core customers.
Yeah.
That's true. And I guess it's kind of at the time, the marketing is kind of decide, are we better off keeping some of these core customers? Or are we better off, am I better off for some, thinking financially, getting new customers?
Yeah, there's the whole hated argument of, we have to make this game appeal to a broader audience, therefore we can sell more, which is in the company's interest, but not really in the game's interest, per se. Oh, and to bring back the previous point, the lack of workers and therefore the need of builders is also not simplifying the game, because the simple version was auto workers, and that doesn't exist anymore. The question of make it more mass market, therefore for the core gamer it basically turns into make it more for people who wouldn't even know what a strategy game is if you beat them with it, and therefore makes the game plummet in sales for people who actually want to play a strategy game, because the game stops being a strategy game. So I fully understand that argument, but I don't think Civ 6 has headed that direction quite yet.
Yeah, I agree. I don't think Civilization as a series will ever stop being a strategy game. I mean, yeah, you can change the mechanics, you know, shift them around, make different focuses, change the animation scheme, change the artwork. But I think at the core, it will always remain the same game. And the elements which will make people good at it will always be the same. You know, you'll always have to focus on having a good food income, your good production, your good economy, and everything about it, and all then will have to be funneled into having an army to either defend yourself or conquer everything. And this has been kind of like the recipe for success since the early days. Not even the heated argument, you know, one unit per tile or a stack of doom or anything else. It didn't really change the game that much as people might make it out. It remained your run-of-the-mill turn-based strategy game. Everything you needed to know if you wanted to be good at Civ 4 basically translated in Civ 5, and I'm sure it will be translated in Civ 6.
Yeah, whether it's Civilization 6, 5, 4, all the way back, it's like, I need an army of some description, but what does that army look like? How do I accomplish it? When do I do that? Those are the things that change. So the particulars of the recipe change. But at the same time, it looks like they're also introducing something, you know, considerations that we didn't have before in Civ 6, which, as Matt mentioned, and that's, I mean, it's something that Firaxis and 2K mention all the time anyway, is the unstacking cities. Oh, that's new. I can't look at how am I going to change from what I did with unstacked cities in Civilization 5 or previous civs, because that wasn't there. So in addition to modifying what I understand to be, this is how I go about doing this in the game, there's this new element that is substantially different enough that whether you're new to Civ or whether you're just new to Civ 6, there's going to be some thinking involved. So to me, the simplification and dumbed down would be, I have to think less, or I don't have to anticipate as much in the future. I can just play the turn. I don't have to do any kind of planning. I can just react.
So instead of having to think, okay, well, I've got to do this and this, but if I want to play at the middle level or lower level, then say I don't have to think about the economy so much. I just have to do a couple things. But if you want to play at a higher level, especially with Civ 4 and other ones, then you had to think deeper mechanical stuff. You could leverage parts of the mechanics to do better than if you didn't pay any attention to those at all. That sort of thing still needs to exist. Otherwise, yeah, it does get simpler. Like, if you don't actually have to think about how mechanics work together to produce something bigger and better, then yes, that's a bit of an issue for the whole depth of mechanics. But as for the core question, yeah, obviously, Darish brought it up in the chat. If they don't change the game, why are they charging for a new version? Yeah. Things are going to change. And there's always different ideas about how to implement things that make it more fun or interesting or even more strategically challenging, one hopes. Question of the get rid of things that had you think versus not. I don't think that's quite in there.
The next paragraph from Nick Parrish, who wrote us this email. I also found myself thinking for the first time that it's a bit weird for a game with such an epic scope that you have to push individual units around the map and worry about tactics is a bit mismatched, which I know is a criticism leveled at Civ 5. Maybe a more abstracted, bigger picture way of conducting war would be more appropriate, And I feel like that in and of itself is a whole separate conversation, and I kind of feel like I want Nick to follow up on that so we can respond to that more specifically. But when I heard of a more abstracted, bigger picture way of conducting war, I immediately thought of Risk. That's not Civ, but seeing as how that might not be what Nick is talking about, I think we need more clarification on that.
Yeah, well, it's certain games in the strategy genre decide to let you utilize the units at hand. Other games in the strategy genre basically let you build the fleet, army, whatever, and then don't let you have anything to do with the outcome. There's many games where that's been appropriately used and worked out sufficiently. So it's a question of how close to the ability to affect the outcome of wars and battles and stuff like that do you get. And I'm thinking of stuff like Stardock's Galactic Civilization 3. You have literally no control over what's going to happen. Totally abstracted. You kind of toss your fleet out there and it runs into something and you get to see a pretty picture, a pretty little movie of what happened. Even though you can go in and go, well, that's stupid. Player would never have done that. The way the game configured the ships or the way you provide me with enough options for specializing ships to do certain tasks, and then you don't actually have those tasks available as options within the fight, and you can't control how they interact in the fight or blah, blah, blah. And then you get random weird stuff kicking up as an example Or you have something like Endless Space, where you build the fleet and then you throw down cards and to give options at different phases of the fight. So it's still abstract because you don't necessarily directly control what's going on, but you can, you know, put your finger on it every once in a while and push it in one direction or another. And then you have games like Civ that says, if you want a four, do it yourself.
Yeah, long story short, Civ 5 moved in more of a Battletech / Warhammer tabletop gaming direction with how we handle combat, and not everybody likes that. And going back to the point about core audience, you know, I think the transition from Civ 4 to Civ 5 was the big transition. I don't think we're really going to have that problem with Civ 6.
Yeah. Civ 4, you still had control over what was going on. You had stacks of units, and you still had to move them around the map, and you still had to do stuff with them. The only difference really between the one and the other is that you didn't have the one unit per hex. Therish brings up Endless Legend in the chat, though I would say Endless Legend is actually further off the map than Civ is. I think Civ's more in the middle, and because with Endless Legend, it pops open a whole map, and then you have to actually have to do the fight for that section of where it is, and that can take much longer time than the Civ style. Though his point was more that you don't necessarily have full control because you can give units orders and then it'll attempt to do those orders during that turn, but things change and you can't specifically individually control each unit on its specific part of the phase. But yeah, it's kind of like strategy games have a lot of options on how to handle that sort of thing. People have different preferences. So,
All right. Continuing on here from Nick. For the record, I was a no Civ 5 naysayer. I probably put as much, if not more, time into Civ 5 than Civ 4. I found them to be two different, but quite enjoyable games. But with Civ 6, I'm finding myself with similar criticisms that some people had about Civ 5 and the direction the series seemed to take when it was released. I hope it sells well for Firaxis. It seems likely to me that they focused on making the game accessible and attractive to new players. Well, to me, making a game accessible and attractive to new players and making it accessible and attractive to existing Civ players need not be mutually exclusive. Although certainly at some point, you're probably going to find someone who doesn't like the change from one Civ to another, or you're going to find someone who said, you know what, I didn't play a previous Civ title, I look at this new Civ title, and I still don't want to play it.
Yeah, it happens.
This really sounds like the transition from 4 to 5. I can totally see a plethora of mails like this when Civ 7 comes along and it's like, oh, I think they're changing the game too much. And I mean, back when Civ 5 transitioned to Civ 6, it was okay, but we got used to it. I think the transition won't really be that difficult. And like I said, the core will remain the same. For won't have to learn anything from scratch if you're already very familiar with the series.
You kind of have to throw the next paragraph in as part of this. Maybe there's room in the market for games like Civ 5 and 6 and a game called something like Civ Legacy aimed at diehard veterans, which updates and refines the Civ 4 experience. So, I mean, when you take that with the previous paragraph that Dan put in there, yeah, it's basically your point, but I just had to throw that second paragraph in, is the transition from 4 to 5 wasn't well taken by some people who didn't like change, or the particular changes that really irked them. And then since it's continuing on in 6, those same people are still not going to be too happy, and they'd like to go back in time to the Civ 4 style and have an updated version of squares and stacks.
With every new entry in a series, no matter what kind of game it is, or TV, or movies, or stuff, there's always some people who are going to be, they changed it, it sucks.
Yep.
And I almost feel like Nick is having an argument with himself.
Yeah. Kind of. He's like, I'm not sure if I don't like this, I'm not sure if I do like this.
Which I think is healthy to a certain degree, because we all do that in our real life. Yeah. Or I like to think that we do. We need to do that, because we're trying to make an informed choice, and of course the best choice for us might not be the best choice for Tom, Dick, and Harry, Sally, Jane, and Sue. I don't know where I necessarily got all these names from. But anyway, sounds like a weird band.
Yep.
Yeah.
Stuff happens. I'm sure we're going to look at Civ 6 and say, okay, especially once we get our hands on it and people start playing properly, not this weird stuff that's going on right now, that there's going to be parts of it you're like, you know what, they changed this, but it wasn't for the better. Or they need more work on it to make it better.
But to be fair, that's where we were with Vanilla Civ 5.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, yeah.
Now that it's had a couple of DLCs and some little extra bits done tweaked to it, now we love it. A couple of DLCs and some tweaks to it, we're probably going to love Civ 6 as well.
Nick has said, feel free to pick up bits of this email if you decide to use it on air. Bit of an essay, I know. But see, the thing is, as much as you were arguing with yourself, we were able to follow. Like, it was very conversational. It was thoughtful. And with the criticism, you were being constructive. You know, if this was Civ 6 is going to suck, explicative, 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 we wouldn't have mentioned it on the show. You know, it's we want it to be thoughtful. Plus, you took the time to put these thoughts down and send it to us. I mean, it was addressed to us specifically. And we love receiving emails because it validates our existence.
So Zarish put it as Phil probably wants to say, let's at least hope MP works on launch.
Knock on wood, or plastic, or silicon, or whatever.
Whatever you can find.
Yeah, I hope so as well.
That is just a generalization, of course, well, yeah, of the, we just hope the game works.
That would be nice.
Well, we're pretty sure single player works. Multiplayer, well, we'll see.
We'll see.
Well, also not overly broken.
A little broken's okay.
Yeah. Well, I mean, like, hey, look, let's make four horsemen.
And certainly someone in the Civ community will find out something that wasn't realized by the developers, etc., during testing, and then they're like, oh, we should do something about that. But there are some egregious things that are like, really, guys?
Yeah, you didn't see that yourself?
Support the ongoing Polycast Patreon campaign.
Collective achievements.
Personal incentives.
Month-to-month commitment.
For more information, visit thepolycast.net. /Patreon.
Call in today.
In North America, 301-637-7659.
In Europe, 44-121-288-7659.
The only thing worse than being talked about is not being talked about.
Log on to the series' official website at
thepolycast.net.
I kind of view it like the difference between the regular season and the playoffs in sports. You know, in the regular season, I try to stay up on what's going on, but I don't really pay a lot of attention or watch much. And then, you know, the release is like the playoffs. You know, okay, I'm all in. This is when it counts. Let's do this.
Oh, that's interesting. I kind of thought of the previews more as preseason games. And then when the game is actually released, like, okay, this is the season. This is when it counts. Because you can do stuff or see stuff that happens in the preseason that, oh, they've addressed that, you know? Oh, this player isn't playing that position anymore, or they're not starting, or they've adapted but didn't go well in the preseason.
Well, the thing is that in baseball, basketball, the NHL, I mean, the regular season is so long and it doesn't determine the champion that, you know, each individual game loses a lot of its meaning. I mean, yeah, in the NFL it's a little different, but it's kind of like European soccer that way. You know, I just kind of look at the regular season as something to pay a little bit of attention to, but the playoffs is who determines the champion.
Stormtrooper, look at all the nerds talking about sports. Yeah, that's right. We're taking over sports, too. Are you kidding? There's so much nerdy things you can do with sports, like stats especially.
Yeah, seriously, like, all the stats.
Sorry, Jocks, you lose everything.
You can nerd out on anything. I mean, that's just how it is.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I mean, obviously gaming nerds are better than sports nerds, but, you know, you're still nerds.
Whoa. We're all nerds here. There's no reason to single out one group and say they're better or worse.
Oh, really? Oh, well, if we want to really get down to it, then we could talk about the gamers. Like, man, those first-person shooter people, I just, you know, okay.
Yeah, exactly. Don't do that.
Well, as long as I don't have to actually interact with any of them.
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
I acknowledge you exist, but I kind of wish I didn't even have to do that. Whoa.
If you've ever seen one of their forums or whatnot, oh my god.
And from their perspective, we probably just don't swear enough and insult each other's mothers enough. So,
exactly.
You know.
Anyway, thank you for listening. This was Polycast episode 267. Wow, that's a lot. Entertaining you, Makalua.
Who needs food herself? Mm.
Thank you.
Much kilometerage, because I can't say mileage.
Martin Alvito.
Planned obsolescence, baby.
Imagine.
Welcome to 10 years of Polycast.
And the Mian team.
It was on October 21st, 2006, that the first episode of Polycast was released, and then 10 years to the day, Civilization VI is being released. That is amazing, and also amazing, congratulations, Martin, on being 7th on our guest co-host list of the longest time between appearances. You're at 113 episodes, so yeah. Welcome back.
Thank you.
And if we're still around, we look forward to hearing from you again on another 113 episodes. All right.
Okay.
That's your number.
If not sooner.
Yeah, I'm not saying we need that much time to recover since the last time you were on the show. It's more like you needed that much time to recover from us.
Record date?
October 15th, 2016.
Civilization 4, 5, and Beyond Earth sound clips. Copyright Take 2 Interactive. Copyright Civilized Communication at civcom.net.